Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from the Dark Side of Wikipedia. If you like this show and you also like the paranormal, then be sure to check out my other podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every single Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Here's a 15-minute preview of a recent episode of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Science of the Dead, a conversation with John Kazuka. When your hero passes onto the other side, especially as a child, it is heartbreaking. If you only had one more day, one more hour, one more second to say what you wanted to, it could make the whole thing a little easier to bear. However, that's usually not how it goes. When you're a child, you're still learning what is possible and impossible. So is it really all that impossible when you see your deceased hero walking around the downstairs entry to your home? That's where it all started for John Kazuka, as we hear his story today on The Grave Talks.
Well, I was always kind of that weird kid that liked hearing about ghosts, but it really kicked in actually when I was a kid. My grandfather had passed away. And, you know, after things settled down, my grandma wanted to have me and my brother over there. And we went over there. We slept on the second floor of this older Victorian styled house. And my grandfather passed away on the main floor. And to get water, obviously, you had to come down stairs. So you come down six stairs, you hit this landing, and then you have to go down another flight of stairs to get to the kitchen area. And it was late at night. I don't know what time it was. And I was coming down the stairs. I needed water, and I really needed to go to the bathroom because I drank a lot of water. So I came down the first flight of stairs, hit the landing, and I watched my grandfather walk past the bottom of these stairs. And I remember flying down these stairs. I started crying. I mean, the guy was my hero, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he came to every one of my hockey games. He was my rock.
Yeah.
When I got down there, he was gone. So ever since that day, I've been on this mission to find out, was I dreaming? Did I actually see him? You know? And that was kind of really what kicked me into the paranormal.
Yeah. Well, that's what age were you again on that?
Gosh, I must have been about 8.
Wow. So you had this experience and you had to, because your grandpa was already gone, so you knew that. So did you just know instantly that's grandpa's ghost? Or what was going through your 8-year-old mind, if you can recall?
Well, I actually do remember it pretty vividly because it's one of those life events that as hard as you try to forget some of it, you just can't. What I thought was the whole thing was a dream and my grandpa never died at all. He looked so real. Like, it wasn't your cliche white ghost. He looked like my grandfather, full color, everything. So I remember thinking, I mean, did I just dream this? Is he alive? You know, and yeah, that's what made me fly down the stairs crying. I thought it was a horrible dream.
Sure. I mean, because everything at that age, you know, you're past the early stages, but there's still a lot of new experiences. And sometimes things that you thought were impossible are not so impossible. So maybe that's just another one of those things that was happening, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's just it's an interesting time in life to have an experience like that. How did that go? I mean, what was your reaction, you know, with your parents? Did you say anything? How did you handle that?
I did actually tell my mom. It took me a little while to tell my mom when I got home, just because, I mean, who wants to say they saw, you know, your mother's father? I mean, I didn't want to say anything, and I didn't want my brother to freak out or my mom to freak out, but I eventually told her, and my mom was really cool about everything. She looked at me, she said, that doesn't surprise me. And, you know, my mom always kind of nurtured that side of me, like my wanting to know more about ghosts and bringing home a plethora of ghost books. And, you know, just she really nurtured my curiosities.
Mm-hmm. And that's awesome that they sat there and they weren't, you know, just dismissive of it. What was the reaction in terms of, you know, being a family member? So this would have been the grandpa. So whose dad would that have been?
that would have been my mom's dad. So, I mean, she when she said it wouldn't surprise me, I mean, I don't know if there was a conversation between her and my stepdad after that. Mm-hmm. I did my thing. I had to get ready for a hockey game anyway. And that's literally right when I told her.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I have no idea how it went after that. But, yeah, no, my mom was really good. She actually, from that point on, I remember my mom bringing me home just random books about ghosts after that.
Tell me more about as life progressed and you're getting the ghost books. We probably went through a lot of the same ones, what was available at the time as kids. I mean, tell me what was sparking, what was your interest in it specifically? What sort of answers were you seeking out? What was the interest as a child?
Well, my interest always came back to my grandfather. I always wanted to know if I actually saw him or if I dreamt the whole thing. So I started really looking into these stories. And it was like the more stories I read, the more I believed I saw him versus me dreaming I saw him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, from my personal account, it was I'm trying to find the right verbiage here to really describe it, but it was kind of surreal. And as I got older and grew, and the more I learned, the more I recognized that the likelihood of me seeing him is more or greater than the likelihood I didn't.
Sure. As you continued on into life and you were getting more and more interested in the paranormal, where did that lead you? I mean, as a child, did you have any other experiences?
No, I mean, I was looking for my grandmother was actually kind of similar to my mom. So, we'd go on trips. I grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada, and we go on trips to, British Columbia, like Burnaby to visit an uncle. And along the way we'd stop and I'd have to go into these abandoned houses. And she'd always pull over and let me go explore. Mm-hmm. And it really fueled my passion. If that makes any sense.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I mean, that would be a dream of mine if I had a family member that said, hey, yes, go run up to that abandoned house over there. It was that was like my favorite thing of road trips, because you'd be like, there's one. And the joke was always, that's your house, Dad, or that's your house, Mom. I to this day, if it weren't the fear of being arrested or something and being a single dad, yeah, I would probably do it. I'd be a lot more adventurous in terms of going and stopping and taking a look. When she's 18, the abandoned houses better still be there.
Exactly, right?
Yeah. So you got these interesting experiences and settings and just kind of being drawn into that creepy side of things. As you got older, out of childhood, how did that, did this die down? Did it then come back? Tell me how life was from there on.
Well, I mean, as I got older, I started looking at more of the scientific side of things, like going through school. I mean, I did really well in science. And mm-hmm. I started applying, different scientific probabilities to see, and it just kind of progressed from there. The older I got, the more into things I delved. I was this hockey kid. I mean, my hockey was taking off. My dad really drove me. And, I was that kid that I didn't want to go to Disney World. I wanted to go find a haunted house. Let's go see if there's something in there. Let's apply a scientific approach to this now. Mm-hmm. The first law of thermodynamics is my favorite. It's the basis of the pseudoscience of, paranormal investigation, of course. Mm-hmm. Energy can't be destroyed. It can only be changed, but you can't destroy an energy. It doesn't matter what that energy is. So all those millions of neurons in our brains at the time of our passing, they have to go somewhere, mm-hmm. I must have been about 13 when I really discovered this first law of thermodynamics. And it just really, really piqued me and really kind of spurred me to take a more scientific approach as opposed to the mindset of a kid, right?
Sure.
Even though I was a kid.
Yeah. So, I mean, as you were taking a more scientific approach, what other things did you start to learn and discover about this world of the paranormal?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me was I started, seeing other people's accounts of it. And I started really delving into things and, you know, discovering things like EMF and you know, how people are doing that and how white noise was used to simulate, you know, let me recant that. How people would use white noise as a form of communication for the other side.
Yeah.
So I always did stuff like that. I remember actually having this black and white TV that my grandmother had given me just so I can go and turn it on and have this white noise going in her basement trying to find my grandfather. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it was things like that. Like I started getting older, I started, you know, experimenting more, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
Where it was, I'd take things that I'd read about and I'd actually, you know, do experiments with them. With you know, a large fail rate, I will add. I mean, sure. Back then I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was things like that.
And that's an interesting one to talk about for a moment, that white noise that we hear, you know, through, you know, ghost boxes or what have you.
Yeah.
Why do you think that is? What is it that, why is it that white noise seems to be ways of communications at times for spirits, you know, versus just, you know, radios on and, you know, what is it about the white noise?
Gosh, you know, I really wish I had that answer. That's actually something, it's funny you say that, because that's actually something that's been burning on my mind for years. What is it about this white noise? And it's, I don't know how it becomes this beacon. You know, I don't understand how something from the other side can actually use this white noise to communicate with us. Whether, you know, I'm not going to use the obvious SB7 term, but, mm-hmm. you know, whether I'm using a spirit box or not, whether I'm doing or implementing some other form of white noise, how do they do it? And it's just, I can't come up with anything. All I know is it works.
Yeah.
And it works well.
And what about this? This is a question I have for you being an investigator out there. Right. Having white noise, I mean, if you have a dial on your radio, which everyone does, you could find a radio station on the AM band that is strictly static.
Absolutely.
And it's just because there's nothing there. What's the difference between just sticking on the static band and trying to communicate that way versus... Right. Scanning this, you know, in great succession?
Well, the thing is, it's a frequency thing. Mm-hmm. So you can leave it on one station, but you have minimal success chances that way, because you're putting all your eggs in one basket.
Okay.
Whereas when you turn on, we'll use your spirit box, for example. Mm-hmm. When you pop your spirit box on, it's sweeping through multiple stations.
Sure.
So all that white noise. So you have a greater hit risk. I mean, it's kind of like playing the lottery, right? The more times you buy a ticket, the greater your chances to win the lottery.
Okay.
So applying that same thought process, the more channels you have access to and you're sweeping through, mm-hmm. the greater the chances you're going to have versus just leaving it on, say, 88.1.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.